Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
It's so damn hot. Milk was a bad choice.
I just couldn't resist because not only is it warm outside, and I've been not complaining about the studio as much as some other shows because I think they've had warmer temperatures, but it's over 80 in here today, Sue, as you know.
Wow.
We have HVAC issues in the building.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, apparently
shocking.
We do. This is 2 weeks, and you know what I didn't even know? And let me introduce the panel. Let's see, that's Jane Duker. How are you, Jane?
Great.
Saw you yesterday at a lunch, and we could talk about that just a little bit. It's great to have you in here. I did send a text out to the panel. I said, be advised, it's
you
warm
did.
In here
Thank
today.
Thank you. And I'm glad that I got the beautiful view outside in the park.
Oh, yeah. It was full again today, wasn't it?
Oh, it's
I know.
Full of a, you know, just, yeah, put up, yeah, pull up that blind there, Ethan.
You know.
Let's take a look at it.
It had really been empty to the homeless drug addicts for a little bit, but
yeah,
now they're back in there. Former State Senator Jeff Smith is with us. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good. Just coming up from the park.
And Greg Keller, GOP consultant, the founder of Atlas Strategy. Let's see if I have the right mic on for Greg. Hi, Greg.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
The engineering team, I didn't know this, Sue. The engineering team told me is we have one of these blowers outside of the studio, kind of like they do on the NFL sidelines if it's too hot or if it's too cold.
Right.
And they said when they came in here a couple of weeks ago into the building, this kind of happened on a Saturday, and it's 2 weeks going on, that the in-studio temperature at KMOX was 97 degrees. They said, like,
wow.
If you touch the counters and the equipment,
it
was, like, hot to the touch. So we've to a certain extent, gotten off easy on this side of the building. But, yeah, it's a little warm out there today. But let's talk about some stuff that's going on. And, Greg, I'll start with you here on what happened with the government shutdown. Rhetorical question. What exactly did the Democrats get out of the 43 days in the end?
I think all they really accomplished was making their base incredibly mad. If you look at MSNBC, I mean, it is an out-and-out civil war amongst Democrats, civil party, their base versus their D.C. establishment. I have never seen, I mean, geez, I'm trying to think of the last time that I've seen the Democrat base this mad. They are at leadership's throat. Chuck Schumer is very likely, if AOC decides that she is going to run against Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, who many people are blaming for this, and probably rightly so, he is going to lose in a landslide to her. Dems are in hashtag disarray.
Do you think that they're in as much disarray as the Republicans who are worried about Epstein? Emails?
Yes, I do.
Because nobody's
worried about Epstein.
Well,
you guys, as much as
the Democrats think that this they actually have.
You know,
a problem
Barack Obama
this.
Is mentioned in there today, right?
Oh yeah, right.
No. I'm serious. He's in there.
Jane,
as the worst human
the Clintons
being,
are, the Clint-
and knew the gr- knew
yeah,
that
Jeffrey
he was with all the girls.
I love this. Epstein said that Donald Trump is the worst person of all time, and you guys think that's some sort of own.
And by the way, he was a Democrat, so I don't know what. There's nothing to the Epstein
so
stuff
is
right
Trump.
Now. Well, that's true. Okay, that's fine. But what? Wait, you guys. Want to keep going to that? We don't care about that right now because
I'm sure.
There's no. But Jane, there is no proof whatsoever. There's a lot of people that hung with Jeffrey Epstein, and you got Jasmine Crockett, our St. Louis chick down in Houston, trying to talk about this in this redacted name that was released by the Democrats and CNN. They had to be honest about it. They're like, yeah, that was your side. She's picking on the Republicans for redacting the name of someone who committed suicide this year. It was the Democrats who took out the name in an effort to be dishonest. So let's stick with the government shutdown.
I think there are a lot of Republicans who want those files released.
That's fine. Yes, the hard MAGA side, they do. But they we're not talking about Jeffrey Epstein right now. We're talking about the government shutdown.
Correct.
And for the most part, people in this country are not affected by Jeffrey Epstein. Okay, so let's move on. And by the way, some of
the
so-called yeah, they were.
Oh my goodness!
You don't think people were affected by the shutdown who weren't getting paychecks? I think they were affected. You guys shut the government down for 43 days.
Right.
You think it was worth it?
I think that both sides suffered equally.
In what way did our side suffer? I'm so confused. Jeff, how did our side suffer here?
Yeah.
Well, you got your ass kicked in the elections last week.
Well, that too.
In deep blue states. It was terrible.
Hey, Mark, really. Mark, first of all, Virginia and New Jersey, you know, Virginia has a Republican governor right now, okay? And the legislature, the state legislature, is almost even, okay? It was just about tied in both the House and the Senate, and the Democrats routed Republicans in the state legislative level and took it from almost tied to near supermajority status because every single county in the state of Virginia, not just the Democratic areas, every single county became more Democratic than Republican. So, I mean, one hypothesis would be that the attention paid to the shutdown and the schism between the two parties on the shutdown, which was primarily health care, the Democrats are supporting a continuation of subsidies to keep health care affordable for people on the exchange, and Republicans were opposed
to
it. That issue became more salient.
People had voted before that was even out
there. So that's one possibility.
Nope,
a second possibility.
I got the possibility. You're going to give me answers. I'll tell you what the answer is in a second.
Donald Trump is at 40% approval rating, and that's really the most influential thing in any midterm or any off-year election.
Yes, let's piggyback off that.
Yeah.
What it is it's women, younger women in particular, but for whatever reason, guilty, white, middle-aged women who have a serious case of TDS. That's who came out and voted in deep blue states. You can take your victory lap. I know the margins were big. No one's going to remember anything about that when we go to the midterms next year.
Except the midterms, the renters, the MAGA Trump renters who don't vote unless Trump is on the ballot, that is a big problem for Republicans.
Yeah, those would be the renters that gave us control of the House of Representatives, the presidency, and the U.S. Senate. I love to hear Democrats talking about this last election in these deep, deep blue states as if it was some great night for them. It was a horrible night for them. I'll give you a couple of reasons why. First of all, they elected a communist, which is the base of your party. You elected a communist.
We did.
Because that's the base of your party,
and that's where the heart of your party is
with the communists. We are going to hang that around your guy's neck every single day that he does something insane, which he has already started to do, and he isn't even in office yet. The other reason it was a great night for us was, I said going into this election, the Virginia Attorney General election is going to be very instructive because there was an out-and-out psychopath, sociopath, Jay Jones, running for Attorney General of Virginia, who had been sending texts to the effect of, I want all Republicans and their children to die, okay? He is running to be the chief law enforcement officer of the state of Virginia. And the other night was very instructive in that it told us exactly how many sociopathic and or psychopathic Democrat voters there are in the state of Virginia. Because, of course, if you vote for someone like that, you are definitionally psychotic. Well, it turns out, Mark, there are 1.75 million psychopathic Democrat voters in the state of Virginia. I will remind you, Mark, you were mentioning earlier, just a moment ago, these disillusioned young female voters who came out en masse against Republicans. Well, we already know from Pew exactly how many of those women are diagnosed with serious psychiatric problems. They self-profess to Pew. 60% of those women, young Democrat women, have been diagnosed and self-report as having a serious mental illness. This is the challenge going forward for the Democrat Party. They're completely off the rails. They have literally gone psychotic.
I love Greg Keller.
So do I, by the way.
He makes me so happy. And it's
how can you challenge him? All
I have to do is put the hook. Oh, and he bites hook, line, and sinker. It is more joy. I love you too. Is more joy than I even deserve. So all I have to do is say Epstein, and he spirals into a whirling dervish.
We're trying to talk about your party. Who is Greg or Jeff Smith? Who's the leader of the Democrat Party right now?
So any party So first of all, let me just say, Greg said it was an incredible night for Republicans.
I don't think it was. I'm going to say no, it wasn't. And if you think,
but that's okay.
If you really think it's an incredible night when 95 out of 95 counties in Virginia move left from where they were a year ago in the presidential election, then good on you. I can't wait to see what you think about
next year's election, for the record.
Okay. So,
but now, I like Keller's enthusiasm.
I love it.
So you asked who is the leader of the Democratic Party right now. And one thing that happens with pretty much all parties in this moment, okay, it happened to the Republican Party in, you know, 2009, okay, after they got, you know, trounced the Obama-McCain. It happened to the Republican Party again in 2013 after, you know, they thought Romney had a decent shot and then he lost. Parties are typically adrift for the first year. You know, after they lose, there is no obvious Democratic successor. There's a lot of interesting candidates out there. You know, Gavin Newsom's had a good run the last couple months. He's become more prominent. He's shot up to in the polls. But there's a lot of other people out there. And Democrats are going to have a chance over the next year to start vetting these people, whether it's Wes Moore, the governor of Maryland, who's
Josh Shapiro, Andy Beshear in Kentucky.
Yeah. So there are, and what we're talking about here is, the Democratic Party, I think, has gotten some of the excesses out of its system, some of the stuff that was way too far left, some of the positions.
When did they do that?
Some of the positions that Kamala Harris had taken that came back and hurt her in the 2024 elections, positions she had taken in 2019, 2020, when she ran for president the first time. Now we've got a new crop of people, some of whom were not elected to high office at that point, like, a you know, Wes Moore, who are not weighted down with that kind of baggage and
tied
can
to the woke,
take
to the woke militia.
Yeah, and can come at this with fresh eyes.
By the way, I don't deny that, but the problem is you lived in New York City, right?
I did.
So let's talk about Mamdani because, we're going to use him to our advantage.
Of course,
and I've said on the record, I've said, look, let's not overestimate the gift that he might be because, look, he's a good looking guy. He's got a smile. He's, you know, slick, and the media is not going to really cover him and ask questions. But when you have someone like that and Katie Wilson, who is even more bat blank crazy in Seattle, those are people that are running pretty big cities in America. Brandon Johnson, he's a nut. Those are the people that most regular people will not support in a presidential election or otherwise, unless they're in their districts that are crazy.
Okay, and the trend in, and look at what happened right here in St. Louis, or look at what happened in that city that is lampooned by your side as, you know, the far left, you know, lunatics of San Francisco. San Francisco's elected a moderate Democratic mayor whose focus has been on empowering police to clean up the city and get the fentanyl, you know, crisis out there under control. He will not utter Donald Trump's name in public. He doesn't talk about federal issues. And
see, I like that.
And we
don't we all?
I like that.
We
And so I think
he's hyper focused on
San
Francisco.
He's hyper focused on San Francisco. And I think our mayor is
I don't disagree, except for the Trans Awareness Day. Because look, if there's one group that needs more awareness, it's transgender people. So I'm glad that Kara went on the limb for that one. Certainly.
So while I understand, and I was at a Republican Party fundraiser in Southwest Missouri a couple days ago,
and honestly, you came out alive. Congratulations.
I didn't let anyone know that I was a Democrat, but one thing that is interesting that to me is just how quickly the grassroots have glommed on to this Mamdani thing. Like when Rudy Giuliani ran for president, it was famously said that in a debate, his lines were just a noun, a verb, and 9/11. Well, every speaker that spoke at this Republican fundraiser pretty much was just a noun, a verb, Mamdani, every single sentence. And I think we're going to be dealing with that potentially for the next couple of years.
Absolutely.
So I hope and I pray that he does a decent job running New York City and doesn't do things that cost Democrats in the heartland, because he is going to be Republicans are going to make him one of the two or three most visible Democrats.
Hey, hang tight. We got much more. It's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Friday edition of Sue's News coming up in the next hour. Hey, Sue, by the way, on Monday, this will be fun. Scott Jennings' book comes out, A Revolution of Common Sense, and we'll have him on in the 3 o'clock hour. And then on his syndicated Salem show, which we air at 8 p.m., Joe Arnold is going to interview Scott on
that's
show.
Awesome.
How cool is that, Jane?
Yeah,
you know,
I like
you know
it.
Joe.
Yeah,
that's our
great.
Mutual friend down in Louisville. Jane Duker's on the panel here this afternoon. Greg Keller, Republican consultant, the founder of Atlas Strategy Group. Jeff Smith, former Missouri State Senator. He's the executive director of the Missouri Workforce Housing Association. So it looks like, and we've talked in Missouri for a while, Republicans have been talking about getting rid of the state income tax. There are very, you know, I guess, significant success stories out there with states that don't have an income tax. Tennessee comes to mind when, you know, you make comparisons to Missouri. But Greg, it looks like Governor Kehoe is going to put this as a priority. You know that Republican members of the legislature are interested. Is this something that can be realistically passed this spring? Wait, hang on, wrong mic. There you go.
Yeah, I think this can be done. I mean, I would remind you, Governor Kehoe ran on this in the Republican primary and in the general election and won both by very comfortable margins. To your point, Mark, we have been getting lapped by zero income state taxes. Tennessee, Texas, Florida. That's where people are moving. Where are they leaving? They are leaving Democrat states like New York, like California, that have huge, like New Jersey, that have huge tax burdens. Now, what Missouri has been doing is we have cut the income tax from 6% to about 4.7%, which has been just about enough to stay in the middle of the pack. But if we are going to start growing like those states, we need to do what those states have done to attract employers, employees, and economic activity. Number one on that list is cutting the state income tax.
Is it fiscally possible, Jane Duker? You worked in a governor's administration, so what do you think here?
I mean, here's the difficulty. I'm not saying that you can't do it without an income tax. You can. I mean, you're going to have to fill in that revenue or you have to make cuts. This is not complicated. Americans deal with these decisions every day with their own checkbooks. You either raise revenue or you cut spending. Okay? Those are always
and will always be the choices. Debt, but we have to have a balanced budget.
Yeah, we're not allowed to go in debt,
which, thank God.
So, I mean, so that's the deal. And the other issue that you need to look at is the stability of your revenue sources. So when you're funding things like education and healthcare and things that, you know, priorities, that, you know, having a diverse tax base, just like you have diverse investments in your own portfolio, that you know, sort of evens out the economic, you know, things that you can't control. And so the less we diversify our portfolio in Missouri, the more volatile our revenue sources become. Is it possible that we can live like that? Yes. Is it advisable? I mean,
again, this would also be
after 9/11, we couldn't control the economy.
Right. There are variables, but let me point something out that sometimes gets missing when we talk about something like this. Same thing applies for the city earnings tax, which, let's face it, that was something that Mayor Slay and Jeff Rainford, they talked about getting rid of that. Mm-hmm. Under any circumstances in that situation or the income tax, we're talking about a phase out that would happen over, well, in the city, it was over 10 years. So the money wouldn't just disappear in the first year. It would be phased out over the course of 5 to 10 years or something like that.
The city is far more reliant
on the earnings
tax
than the state is on the
Missouri
income tax, right?
Yeah, the Missouri is on the income tax. So if you want to make a decision, but, you know, they're also talking about cutting property taxes to nothing, talking about taking income tax to nothing, well, then what is going to pay for these things? I mean, I genuinely want to know, what is the alternative here? How are you going to pay for schools and fire?
When you say property tax, you mean personal property tax we're not getting rid of property tax. I wish we would.
No, they are. No, they're talking about it. I went to hearings on it. Yeah, absolutely,
Bill,
they're talking about it.
But that's
not
a state.
Year after year. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. But the property taxes that we pay, most of them don't go to the state. They go to the local school districts,
They go to schools, and they go to fire.
Right.
And so, but if you prohibit the local governments from levying that tax, then what is the replacement? We can talk about user fees, I mean,
sales taxes is sales probably taxes what ends go. Up being the thing. And so
right.
there's always unintended consequences when you right. shift tax burden, right? And so
right.
you think about the good part of it, like, hey, if there's no income tax, companies are going to want to come here. You know, it'll be great for them. But, like, are people going to want to shop here? And are people, like, what are car dealers going to do if the sales tax doubles here?
Right.
And in St. Louis and Kansas City, you know, the two biggest population centers, there's about, you know, 2 million people in this metro area. And there's about, you know, Kansas City has a bigger percentage of their population already on the Kansas side. But for those people who have decisions to make, are they going to shop on this side
well,
or that side of the state
not gonna,
line?
The sales tax is not going to double.
Well, it more than doubled in Tennessee.
What were the numbers? Do you know off the top of your head?
I'm going to get them. I'm
interested. I truly am.
Yeah.
But
no.
Because, like, I mean, one of the issues, and, like, to your point, I get concerned about the sales tax getting too high from this perspective. And it's been a little while since I've tracked this. I was talking to Keller about it before the show. But in the neighborhood that Sue just moved out of, in Holly Hills, right there at Loughborough and 55, I just always remember when I went to the Lowe's there, Sue, yeah. and I looked at my bill, it was like 10.5%, 11%. A lot of that was because local yes. tax, but also their special business district taxes. So
yes.
we're on the high side of sales taxes already.
Well, and yeah. you know, the city has low property taxes. They have a low levy, but they have extremely high sales taxes. So you are trading one problem for another. If there was a silver bullet, we'd have done it already.
Well, the good news is no one lives in the city anymore now. I would remind you guys, I mean, there's all kinds of things that are not currently taxed that could very easily be taxed. You talk about services, like services from law firms are not taxed.
Correct.
Why aren't we taxing law firms? I think your average person would be just fine taxing law firms. We aren't taxing, I don't know, cigarettes high enough. We aren't taxing marijuana at the state level. Mm. We aren't taxing online porn at the state level. There are all kinds of revenue sources that you can
use.
You're
saving a lot of money, Greg.
There are all kinds. Yo, I'd be doing just great. Of course, I'm doing.
I appreciated that one.
But the problem is they're not talking about that. They're not. See, this is, I have trouble with
the legislative session isn't even in
well,
yet.
Well, no,
Jane.
Here's the problem is, you know, there's a slogan and we talk about the slogan and we try to implement the slogan, but they're sit down and have a comprehensive discussion about tax.
Well, you guys,
can we do that?
Jane,
I think we can with Mike Kehoe as governor.
Well,
yes, I do. I think
I
we
want
can.
To.
Will you guys concede that your Democrat high tax states are basket cases in every possible way, New York, New Jersey, California, and the like, and that the states, that are growing are all low-tax, deep red states, and that those two things are intertwined? Will you concede
okay.
that?
Because, no, what
because
I will
going
concede
against
is that,
that
the Republicans
like, that's
have
like
been
going
in charge
against, that's going against
for
basic
20 years.
Arithmetic.
Y'all have been in, you all have been in control with huge majorities for 20 years. If there is a problem in Missouri, the Republicans own it.
Here's the problem. When you guys were running stuff, we were between 40 and 50 in everything, and now we're middle of the pack, which is a huge improvement, whether it was education attainment, whether it was economic stability, whatever the case may be.
Scores have gone down.
One of the things that I think, you know, and I don't know where this conversation is going to take us with no income tax. It is something that the governor campaigned on. I know there's a lot of support in the legislature. I think that you do have to be careful. Look, I kind of agree with Jane that we are a low tax state, and with the 4% income
overall,
tax, you know,
right.
having phased that out from 6%, that was a significant win. I'd love to have no taxes whatsoever, but I don't know if you're going to convince people. This would have to go to the ballot, right?
No.
Wouldn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
No,
wait. A tax cut?
Yeah. If
you're getting rid of the income tax,
I think
you would have to go to the ballot.
This goes on the ballot.
Right.
Well, because you're probably changing the Constitution.
Correct.
Yes.
But that in and of itself, like cutting taxes isn't like a hand cut.
Okay, so this gets us to an important point. I think what Republicans will be pushing in Jefferson City is a bill that will simply do one thing and one thing only. It will put this before the voters of Missouri.
Right.
And
if
let them
it does,
decide.
And, I
and
think,
if Democrats and anyone who opposes that is literally standing against democracy as far as, I mean, I think that's what I've heard the last few years. Maybe you guys are anti-democracy now, but I've been hearing for the last 6 or 8 years now that we have to stand with democracy. So who knows? Maybe Democrats will stand against democracy.
Well, I mean,
in this
I think
situation.
If you put a single, I'm going to get rid of, you know, income tax, I think there are actually thinking people who will say, okay, I mean, I could be on board with this, but what does this mean for the overall tax structure, and what does this mean for the overall provision of services in the state of Missouri?
I don't think Governor Kehoe is going to propose to just get rid of it without a replacement.
I would think he would have a full
solution. Well, of course, you're going to have to have discussions about that. Yeah.
There are already discussions taking place about what the replacement source of revenue is.
Yeah.
I think question that we're going to need to look at is look at what other states have done and look at what the results have been in other states that have gone in different directions. And there's competing evidence. It's not just blue states that have, you know, had difficult outcomes. North Carolina has been governed by Democrats, and North Carolina is one of the fastest growing states in the country.
North Carolina has close to zero taxes.
Governed by Democrats. So some of the it's had a Democratic governor for a while.
Who controls the legislature? Who controls the legislature?
Democratic governor. So anyway, the point is that I think we need to look and see what states have gotten rid of the income tax, what the results has been. Tennessee obviously has been a fast-growing state. There are specific things about Tennessee, like the just massive growth of country music in Nashville.
Absolutely.
And tourism that are specific to Tennessee. So we need a bigger sample than just one state.
All right, hang tight. It's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. We're coming back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
All right, so Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. Jane Duker, Forest State Senator Jeff Smith, Greg Keller on the panel. Let's talk about downtown St. Louis just a little bit. We had news, and we talked about this, Jane, a week ago where Peabody is leaving downtown. You said there's another Business Journal story about Arch Apparel perhaps going out of business.
Yeah.
Which is not good. And they had a location down at Ballpark Village, right?
And, I mean, I think, you know, the report indicates that I think Ballpark Village is overall, you know, doing a little better, but Arch is falling through the cracks. And so I feel bad for, I mean, it's a heart-wrenching story about this guy. You know, he's like, he may have to file personal and professional bankruptcy, and it's sad. And, he can go weeks with only getting a couple of customers.
Well, it's interesting you say Ballpark Village is doing a little bit better. I hope it is. I know that on non-game nights, they are significantly challenged, and I'm not sure how some of the restaurants survive.
On the benchmark. That was a little unclear to me, is what's the benchmark as to performance?
Oh, like people buying things.
Is it revenue? Is it people? I don't know.
Well, with Arch Apparel, you mean in particular. But then they're also demolishing. This is all part of our, part of our childhoods here in St. Louis, right? The Millennium Hotel is coming down. That's, been in the skyline for decades. It had the revolving rooftop joint. It's going to come down in phases, they say, over the next 2 years, beginning with the main building, followed by a smaller south tower, ending with the main north tower. And this is something that's being done with the Gateway Arch Park Foundation. They own the site. Now, look, I want to root for downtown St. Louis, Greg. I want St. Louis to be successful, right? I don't see how the guy who wants to put condos in at the AT&T building that bought it for dirt cheap and this redevelopment and then more added on by Cordish is going to actually ever get done. Now, they're tearing down the hotel, so that's a start, but they're going to need customers, aren't they?
Those are three big things that have gone down just recently. Arch Apparel's a big deal. The Millennium Hotel, first time I ever met President George H.W. Bush, was in that hotel. Rest in peace. Used to be a St. Louis landmark. It's going to be going down. It has become a little bit of an eyesore in recent years, sadly. I kind of feel, though. And when you're at the ballpark, maybe gets a little bit in the way of the river and stuff. And that AT&T building, that building went for, what was it, $14 a square foot, 1.5 million square feet.
I
mean,
I don't know what we've done.
I had someone tell me recently that they swear that the new development there is going to be fantastic and they're going to spend $400 million and all this stuff. I hope that's true, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Well, and I'm concerned. I mean, you know, the millennium, I guess it needs to come down. I get it. I'm with you. It's sad, but it got dilapidated, and it probably does cover up the riverfront. But what is the plan?
Mm-hmm.
What is the plan? Are we going to build more shops? It sounds all well and good, but if shops aren't surviving down the street, why? And are we going to put a grocery store? I mean, where are the people?
I don't know, Jane. I'm just as confused by that as you are. Yeah. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, Jeff Smith, do you have any other perspective? We root for downtown St. Louis to kind of maybe make a comeback and to have restaurants. And like, if I wanted to have lunch from where we sit right now, I'm not even sure what we do. Maybe the KFC that's in the building. There's not a lot of places and options that have been successful. I don't know where
Sauce
this
on
takes
the side,
us downtown.
A few blocks away.
You know, I'm not a big fan of that, believe it or not. Everyone loves that place,
like
but
it.
You
it's
like
fine.
It too?
Yeah, I like
okay.
it.
Look, there are some redevelopment projects that are going on that have a lot of potential. There's a redevelopment of the Mansion House, and that's going to be, I think, 415 new units with a lot of amenities and a rooftop pool. You know, that is sort of designed to attract a lot of young people. So maybe that
Let's
will
hope
work.
So.
Yeah, and there's a couple other things going on. There is some legislation that was filed last year that I think is going to be filed again this year that Greater St. Louis is pushing that won't just help downtown St. Louis, but will help the town squares and small towns all around the state. And I think has some bipartisan support for that reason. It's an office conversion tax credit, and it'll basically take some of the buildings that are, these huge office buildings like the AT&T building, but will also have components for small towns and give a tax credit for people who will come in and redevelop them to be kind of mixed use and to have, business on the first floor, but like office on the second floor in small towns, and then help revitalize buildings that are really hard to pencil out, like that AT&T building. It's hard for a developer to make that pencil out. So maybe there's some new language that's going in that I think could help that legislation attract some more support this coming year. So that'll be a bill to watch starting in January.
One of the things, and I'll mention this, Jane, I want to thank you and Ed Rohde. They took me out to lunch yesterday. You introduced me to Senator Brian Williams, who mm-hmm. is running for St. Louis County Executive. I think he's likely to become the next St. Louis County Executive. And mm-hmm. I was impressed. I had only met him one time. Jeff, I think you were there at the legislature when Steve Butts was walking me around that day in February. But I'd never really had a chance to talk with Brian. But I think, look, he impressed me. But one of the things that stood out the most, Jane, is when we were talking about how he's focused on the region and on St. Louis County and not interested in, Hamas and all this other stuff. And Kara,
yes.
to her credit, I think for the most part,
he's
has
trying.
Been avoiding that stuff as well. But look, for this region to be successful, we have got to have St. Louis County and St. Charles County and certainly parts of Jeffco be successful as well. And that's the missing component that has been missing for a while, that nobody seems to want to work together. So maybe there's more of an opportunity on that moving forward. I'm not concerned about the region as much as I am this part of the region where we sit right now and toward the river.
Well, yeah. And I think the regional leaders in this area are chomping at the bit for leadership and people to work with. The problem is that they could not work with Sam Page. You still can't work with Sam Page. I mean, when all the county leaders show up at your council meeting in St. Louis County to push something that benefits the entire region,
and you're not there,
and Sam Page doesn't show up,
right? Yeah,
I mean that says everything you need to know. And so I think that Brian will be an incredibly beneficial collaborator. And I love that voters are now saying, you know what? We don't care about your opinion on international affairs. We don't care about your opinion on national matters unless and until it affects our community. I think voters are more sophisticated than these politicians think they are. They know the difference between the two. I want to hear about roads and trash and safety and everything that will make my community thrive and, just get out of the way so my community can thrive and survive. So I'm hoping that we continue that momentum in this region. And the voters, I mean, they own this. And they have got to say, we care more about making sure this region thrives than we do about these wedge issues that are helping no one.
Yeah, I do agree that people are able to separate those things in the local elections as well. Greg Keller here, Jeff Smith, Jane Duker. It's a Reardon Roundtable. One more segment to go. One more segment to go here on a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. In the next hour, we'll have Sue doing Sue's News Friday edition. We'll have our friend Paul Hall with some entertainment recommendations as we take you into the weekend, and also Frank Cusimano. Gang, former State Senator Jeff Smith, Greg Keller, GOP consultant Jane on the panel. One of the topics I'm going to talk about, this is, don't think it's too far into the weeds, but it didn't really get much attention, and I'm not sure I had this on the list, but they've done some investigations out in California at the University of Southern California, San Diego, and there are college kids that have been documented as not being able to do, like, basic math. Like, we're talking about math that is sometimes elementary school math. And how do we get to a point? Now, some of this has to do with the pandemic, but it's a crisis, Greg Keller, in this country. I mean, we could talk about a lot of different things that don't affect people, but education does affect everybody. And it's stunning. We continue to get stories like this that are rather horrifying. I mean, how do you pass people first and foremost from grade to grade? That may be, you know, one issue, but to get them into college, into academia, and not be able to do basic math, some of the problems that they put in this report at Real Clear Investigations were just simple, like 7 plus 2.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see this. I mean, the University of California system used to be the crown jewel of the U.S. university system. My sister went to UC Santa Cruz back in the 90s when it was almost impossible to get in there. We see that happening not only in places like California, we see it happening in Chicago. There was a report out recently on Chicago schools, Chicago school districts, the writ large, something like only 10% of the kids in those in that district, district-wide, actually are competent in math, reading, mathematics and reading. We need to start thinking about paradigmatic changes to our public education system before we lose an entire another generation of students.
How do we get there? I mean, I've been talking about education reform and school choice for a long time.
Teachers' unions
are not getting better.
It's the fault of the teachers' unions.
Yeah, if it were that easy, we'd have done it already again. I mean, look, the bottom line is we have an urban education crisis. Until we can get to a point where we have smaller classes and we do more. And we have to have a Department of Education that will allow schools to innovate. These one-size-fits-all tests and nonsense, it's all baloney. It's all made-up nonsense.
Well, okay, maybe some of that is true, but one of the issues that they have in California is because they're not doing the standardized tests, they're not catching the fact that these kids can't do basic math.
Well, then that, you know what, that is the school's problem. And you know, I understand having a benchmark. This is a level that somebody has to be at, but these tests... The tests don't test what you need to know. I mean, you ask teachers and they teach to a test because it has nothing to do with teaching kids. And so, I mean, we didn't have forced test scores and we did much better. Okay? I mean, so, I mean, I...
Yeah, we didn't take any of that stuff, did we?
We didn't have any of that stuff. And we all graduated, you know, we didn't demonize teachers. We didn't demonize, you know, school boards. We just said, you know what, these kids need to know these things at these benchmarks and get it done. And so I think we have a bureaucratic nightmare and not letting schools innovate for the communities that they serve. You know, I think it's going to be a multi-pronged approach.
Jeff Smith.
We're just talking about schools that have innovated in communities where they've served. St. Louis has some fabulous charter schools. In the last couple months, I've gotten a chance to tour a few of them. Lafayette Preparatory Academy and Lafayette Square. Fabulous school, high achievement. They're sending most of their graduates in eighth grade to schools like John Burroughs, MICDS, Nearings Hall, Metro, McKinley, like the, you know, the very selective magnet schools in the city, almost exclusively City Garden, Gateway Science and Math. There are several charter schools that are outperforming the St. Louis Public Schools average by an order of magnitude. And I think, you know, we shouldn't dismiss their role, not just in helping low income kids get up to par and be testing it at, you know, proficient levels on state tests, but also helping middle class families stay in the city that can't afford necessarily a fancy private school, but do want to stay here in the urban core.
See, look, there is an urban education issue that's always been out there. My concern is this has gone well beyond the urban education issue.
It is getting worse.
And when you get stories like this, and I'm going to have this guest, this guy's name is Tanner Now, who wrote this, I think I said real clear, he wrote this at the Free Press earlier this week, and it's quite a story, and it'll make you sad. Hey, there was something else that I recommended and I don't know if any of you guys read this. It's an excerpt from John Fetterman's book that was in the Free Press on Monday, and it was quite amazing. It really was.
I heard
you talked a lot about his, you know, his mental health and how he probably even admitted that he should have quit the race and some of the things that he went through. And I even felt guilty a little bit because some of us, and I don't think I really openly mocked him, but we were saying, "What the hell are you guys doing with a candidate like this?" But when you find out the full story of what he went through, and by the way, he had a fall yesterday, ended up in the hospital, banged up his face a little bit. That was apparently some complications with some heart medicine. But man, that guy's story, Jeff, is really incredible.
And he keeps going.
Yeah.
And he stands up.
I mean, I want to read the book.
And he keeps going. I'm going to read the book because I've been a fan. You know that. I told you I'm like a Fetterman Democrat. I just feel
well,
like
we have those here in Missouri, but that doesn't seem to be where your party is. To bring us full circle from the beginning.
See,
how about roundtable guest Steve Butts?
Well,
exactly.
I defend the Democrats on the panel, except for you. Most of them I defend as not being crazy. You understand that? I do, because we don't, you know, that's not our thing. But I do think when you start listening to AOC and Jasmine Crockett and all this,
we have got to come to the middle, or if we offer no view of the world or no policies for working people, we lose.
I'm watching Fox right now, Fox News, and I'm surprised Greg Keller, my partner here on the roundtable, he's got a soul brother, you know, simpatico, running for Texas Senate. Also follows porn stars online, and yet Greg is supporting Ken Paxton in that U.S. Senate race.
Ken Paxton is going to be the next senator from the great state of Texas, and the person that Jeff is talking about is James Tallarico, who's running for U.S. Senate out of Texas, who said the other day that God is non-binary. If you need a picture of where the Democrat Party finds itself today, it's in that quote.
God
is non-binary.
Congratulations, walking Keller into that line. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Look at Keller being so happy.
I know. That was like, did he pay you to do that,
that was
Keller?
A
that was too
easy. That's what we call a high-hanging curveball.
Smith, have a great weekend. Keller, have a great weekend.
Democrats are rooting for Keller's candidate in that race because he's the only one we could possibly beat.
All right. Thank you guys for coming in. I appreciate it. Jane's going to hang out.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.